live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Sleep, sleep, sleep.
Looks like a walking corpse.
Begah!
From the Poly Market Studio in LA, it's the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian with you guys. Almost got your name wrong. It's only been 17 years. Cool day for the members today, for everyone, of course. And we've got very important news on Gaza, on Donald Trump's crazy, salacious trial with Stormy Daniels. Well, actually, I'm going to disagree a little bit with what Stormy Daniels did today, which is going to be interesting.
Me too.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll talk about that in a minute, or a couple of minutes.
We're gonna have a cool day for our viewers today.
Yeah. Okay.
It's gonna be radical, man.
Rad. Anyways, for the members, we got Operation Joy tonight, and I'm going to talk to you guys about how to not judge yourself and not let others judge you. TYT.com/team. To become a member, you could also do donations there. We're woefully behind on donations, to be honest, trying to stay in business here for all you guys. And then lastly, for the members, old school tonight, 9:30 Eastern, just for the members. Tonight live, Ben Mankiewicz and I are back, and we have several topics, including, is Ben Mankiewicz a thing?
We have many topics. We're gonna discuss whether Mankiewicz is a thing. So Cenk, this is what I was gonna say. So John Iadarola on the Damage Report, friend of the show, regular host on Wednesday's second hour and also on Friday's first hour. He is doing this gifted sub thing.
Oh, he is, yeah.
And so here's the problem, okay? He is offering to dye his hair purple in return for X number of gifted subs.
That's right.
And we are falling short because we have not offered anything to our audience. And I think you should maybe consider also dyeing your hair purple.
Right back at you. I was about to say the same thing for you.
Listen.
I already did something. I brought old school back.
Dyeing my hair funky colors is against my religion.
Oh, well, then there's nothing we can do about that. All right. No, but seriously, for all the Dragon Squad guys who are doing an amazing job of helping John with that drive on Damage Report, love you. Any and all shows on the network, helping them matters. It's the same exact thing. We're all same part, company, same community, etc.
No, we compete. We compete with them.
Okay. Apparently she does. All right. Last thing is. I'm done. We're going to talk about how COVID affected tipping too. So that's a fun topic.
Ooh,
for old
yeah,
school.
That's super fun. I get real riled up about that topic these days. So.
Well, you'll get riled up tonight. All right, tyt.com/team to become a Young Turks member and get all this extra content as well. All right, Casper.
You don't want to chit chat a little more?
No, okay. I'm good with it.
All right, fine. Let's do the news.
Israel had warned civilians to leave the area in Rafah yesterday, but gave them little time to do it. Our crew filmed how the bombing started just hours after Israel's evacuation notice. Palestinian medics say more than 20 people were killed in the overnight operation, including children. The bodies today handed over to their families.
Just another day in Gaza, and now Israel has taken full control of the Palestinian side of the Rafah border. thus having complete control over the Gaza Strip, including the border that it previously did not have full control over. And this honestly was likely Israel's plan all along, given the fact that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had made clear earlier that he wanted Israel to have full control of what is referred to as the Philadelphia Corridor. I'll give you more details on that in just a moment. But first, more details on the military operations that were carried out and the fallout from Egypt. So Israel, after they had invaded Rafah, erected two of their flags on the Palestinian side of the Rafah border crossing. Another video also showed an armored vehicle ramming into a Gaza sign flanked by two Palestinian flags by the arrivals hall. Now the IDF claims that didn't do anything wrong. It was just carrying out a very specific targeted operation that allegedly killed 20 Hamas militants and discovered three tunnel shafts. But also keep in mind that the IDF considers all military age men to be militants. So it's likely that they killed civilians and identified them as militants. We really have no confirmation, and I would not take the IDF's word for it. Now the tensions are growing between Israel and Egypt. Egypt has warned Israel that military action on the border, meaning the Rafah border, could violate a 4-decade-old peace treaty between the two countries, which would of course further escalate the tensions and war in that region of the world. It would be a disaster. In a statement, the Egyptian Foreign Ministry said the following: Egypt vehemently denounces the Israeli military operation in Palestine, Rafah, which has resulted in Israel controlling the Palestinian side of the border. The Egyptian Foreign Ministry described the incursion as a dangerous escalation that was threatening ceasefire efforts, adding that the operation endangered the lives of the million Palestinians who depend on the crossing for humanitarian aid and a safe way out for the injured and patients to get treatment. Now, very few people have been able to leave the Gaza Strip for medical treatment in Egypt, but that has happened throughout this war. And obviously the Rafah border crossing has been critical in allowing for aid to come into the Gaza Strip. And now with Israel taking full control of that area, experts are saying that humanitarian aid has completely stopped entering the Strip. And it was already barely trickling in to begin with. So there's a lot more to get to, Cenk. What are your thoughts so far?
Yes. So first of all, Egypt is livid on two fronts. One is that this is a violation of their sovereignty, because the other side is controlled by Egypt. And so Israel just came in and knocked all that down, planted their own flags. That's why they're saying this is technically a violation of their peace deal from all the way from the Camp David Accords. And so Israel just shreds other countries' sovereignty without a second thought. I mean, they bomb Syria all day, every day. Lebanon, they bomb, no hesitation at all. The fact that they're sovereign countries, obviously they bombed the Iranian consulate, which almost started a giant World War III, and now they're doing it to Egypt. Because they don't care about international law. They don't think they're subject to international. They literally think they're above the law. And so, yeah, but you have a peace deal with Egypt that has been fantastically successful for the last 40 years. And now Netanyahu, the warmonger, is threatening to destroy that. The second reason why Egypt is concerned is because they say that the Israeli cabinet had already approved the ceasefire deal that they sent to Hamas. And once Hamas said yes, the Egyptians say, then Israel turned around and said, no, we're backing out of the ceasefire deal. And Egypt's point is, what did you make us go through this whole thing for and pretend that you were in favor of the ceasefire deal only to have Hamas say yes, and then you turn around and betray everyone that was part of the peace deal, including Egypt, Qatar, and the United States of America. So that's their perspective. And lastly, for now on the Rafah crossing, guys, there's a second giant problem. Anna pointed out the humanitarian aid is now blocked. Already there was very little access to humanitarian aid, and already a million starving Palestinians. The second problem is, if Israel controls that border crossing, they could open the border, start bombing near the border to drive the Palestinians into the Sinai Desert in Egypt.
And they wouldn't want to do that, right? It's not like they've stated that they want to do that. But we're not supposed to believe what Israeli government officials say. We're just supposed to pretend like they're not saying the things that they're saying out loud.
Yeah.
Correct?
We're only supposed to believe the parts where they claim to be super moral and that golly gee, there was nothing they could do, etc. But when their cabinet ministers actually say, we want to drive them into the Sinai and we want to take Gaza for ourselves, you're not allowed to say things that they've actually said.
Yeah, this is the thing that's been so incredibly frustrating about this ongoing war and the reaction you get from hardline Israel supporters when you simply state the facts of what's happening and simply repeat the quotes uttered by government officials within Israel, right? You just state the facts and they want to pretend like that's not the reality. Right? Like, okay, so am I supposed to pretend like Itamar Ben-Gvir didn't say that he just wants to kill Palestinian prisoners with no due process? He wants to execute them with no due process because the prisons are overcrowded. I'm supposed to pretend like that doesn't exist. They've been saying that they want to push Palestinians into the Sinai almost since the beginning of this war, but I'm supposed to pretend like they didn't say that. Every military action they've taken from the very beginning has driven to the main goal, the main objectives that they've made clear from the very beginning, but we're supposed to pretend like it's not happening. I just don't understand. So I get that people are afraid to criticize Israel. I totally get that. Okay, there has been a reign of terror on student protesters who are doing nothing wrong. They're getting inflated by a handful of people who say inflammatory things. And I think that's very much on purpose. It's meant to shut anyone up if they even dare consider any critique or criticism of Israel's government. And look, that effort to silence people isn't gonna work, but the gaslighting, you're right, Cenk, you make this point all the time, is starting to really drive me crazy. Because it's not like I'm making up the quotes they're saying. It's not like I'm making up what they claim their military operations are gonna be.
Ben-Gvir said that he wants to encourage the migration, of Gazans out of Gaza. And Netanyahu has said, well, it could be done voluntarily, like if you open the gate and then start bombing the people next to the gate. Well, yeah, they would voluntarily flee for their lives and they drive them into the desert. And even Haaretz has called out Smotrich for basically calling for a Holocaust of Palestinians, saying that the civilian population should be totally annihilated. It doesn't get any more vicious than that. And that's not some rando next to a college chanting some random thing, not connected to anything else. That's a cabinet, sitting cabinet minister inside Israel. So we had a ceasefire deal that Israel crafted according to the Egyptians, and the Americans are winking and nodding that the Egyptians are right and saying, you gotta take the deal, Israel. That is very clear, right? And now Israel's saying, haha, just kidding. We said we wouldn't bomb southern Gaza, then we bombed southern Gaza. Then Khan Yunis, now Rafah, 50 bombs already dropped, border crossing seized. And now we're gonna find out, they haven't done it yet, but we're gonna find out if they're gonna do a full-blown siege and annihilate Rafah. And if they do, one on earth can claim that it wasn't ethnic cleansing and genocide.
They will.
They will, and they'll do their usual maniacal things. But then it becomes even more obvious that they don't care about reality at all and that they're not accidentally lying. They're lying on purpose. I don't mean the Israeli government. The fact that they're lying on purpose is super obvious. I mean Israeli supporters who still think, oh, Israel accidentally killed 24,000 women and children, which is honestly just deranged. It's totally removed from objective reality. How do you accidentally kill 24,000 women and children?
It's Hamas's fault.
Yeah, everything is always Hamas's fault. We got it. Beloved, pure moral Israel would never do anything wrong. I mean, they dropped the bombs that exploded the baby's head, but it must have been someone else's fault.
So, you know, it did Haaretz lie in their reporting when they claimed that Israel would establish kill zones in the Gaza Strip, and any person who entered the kill zone, which of course they weren't informed about, they don't know that the kill zone exists, anyone who enters that kill zone killed immediately by the IDF. Did Haaretz lie in their reporting about that?
And as we're going to talk about later in this show, now we've discovered mass graves, including summary executions and torture. I'm sure those are all accidental too. But look, if you're super biased, and I've lived this and I've said this 200 times now, I grew up Turkish and I know what bias looks like. So good people, like really good moral decent people, can delude themselves into believing almost anything, no matter how outrageous it is, as long as it backs their own ethnic group or religious group.
Their identity. And look, right. let me say this, because I totally understand people who are supporters of Israel and feel that like the campus protests and the criticism that you hear toward Israel on this show is offensive to them because they feel that their personal identity is under attack. Mm-hmm. No, this isn't about your personal identity. This isn't about anyone's personal identity. This is about a foreign country's government and how they are carrying out a war that has slaughtered far more innocent civilians compared to actual Hamas militants that they claim to want to go after. And what's also shocking to me is how what the media always misses in this conversation is that the prime minister himself funded and propped up Hamas. So he empowered the very monster that he's now using as justification for the slaughter of all these innocent people in Gaza.
And the Israeli press has reported that Netanyahu and his government knew that October 7th was coming, and they didn't do anything about it. So to say that their paramount interest is protecting Israeli civilians rather than collective punishment against the Palestinians and just destroying Gaza. 70% of the buildings are destroyed in Gaza. 70% of the housing, I should be clearer. And 90% of the people are displaced. That was all an accident. 90% of the civilians are collateral damage. No, 90% of the civilians is collective punishment. When they've all been displaced, they've all been driven out, they're all homeless, well, a million of them are starving. You got 34,500 dead, and you got another 8,000 that are missing or buried in the rubble. Over 42,000 slaughtered, the overwhelming majority of them women and children. And people still want to pretend that they're the moral army and that they had to slaughter all those people. They just had no choice at all. No, moral, decent people have a choice. Doesn't matter, guys, this isn't about people, it's about governments. Governments do things that are terrible all the time. And right now, Israel, their government, run by right-wing, warmongering madman, is threatening to start wars with almost all of its neighbors now, including Egypt, which they've had a peace deal with that has worked and kept Israel safe for all of these years. But this lunatic is looking to undo all of that and cause what is the United Nations is calling an humanitarian catastrophe.
There's already Rafah. There's already famine in the north, okay? Just complete and utter devastation. But I mean, I don't know how far Israel would need to go for people who keep denying the reality to finally accept what's actually happening on the ground there. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the very lawmakers in this country who are more interested in providing cover for Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of a foreign country, rather than serving the best interests of their own constituents. That and more coming up. Don't miss it.
Back on TYT, Cenk and Anna, but also the OMG killer. Okay, well now we're tough. And Travis Jennings, thank you for joining, guys. They hit the join button below. You guys are awesome. And Jesse gifted 5 Young Turks memberships, making her a hero. Anna.
Well, while Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel's conduct in Gaza is getting a lot of criticism internationally, there are of course those here in the United States who want to provide cover for their actions. So let's get to that story and give you the details.
Israel's prime minister says nobody will stop its military actions, not even the International Criminal Court. The ICC is investigating the country's operations in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, and could issue warrants for the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli leaders. He says such a move would be outrageous and set a dangerous precedent. And the foreign minister insists the country will not be deterred and will continue to fight.
The notion that any Israeli government official pay the consequences for their actions has upset Republican senators in the United States so much that they have penned a strongly worded letter to the International Criminal Court. Now, late last month, it was reported that the International Criminal Court was considering issuing arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, and other senior military officials over war crimes that have been committed in Gaza and also the West Bank. Now, Israel is working through some diplomatic channels. They're playing good cop in order to stop these warrants from being issued. However, the US, or at least certain figures within the United States, have decided to play the role of bad cop and issue threats against the International Criminal Court. And this is coming in the form of a letter penned by Republican senators, and they specifically threatened the ICC chief prosecutor, Karim Khan, in a terse one-page letter obtained exclusively by Zetio. And signed by 12 GOP senators, including Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Florida's Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz of Texas. Khan is informed that any attempt by the ICC to hold Netanyahu and his colleagues to account for their actions in Gaza will be interpreted not only as a threat to Israel's sovereignty, but to the sovereignty of the United States. Oh, that's fascinating. So when the International Criminal Court investigates war crimes committed by other countries, is it questioning the sovereignty of those countries, or is it trying to, you know, maintain international law, maintain you know, certain rules when it comes to the conduct of militaries in a time of war? Now, those who signed the letter, Cenk, include Mitch McConnell, Marsha Blackburn, Katie Boyd Britt, Ted Budd, Kevin Cramer, Bill Hagerty, Pete Ricketts. And Rick Scott and Tim Scott also signed the letter. There's more.
So in the past, we've shown you how a number of people on this list have gotten huge money from AIPAC. And so that's the American-Israel PAC. And guys, so I want you to explain the context for you all. So are there awful anti-Semitic tropes in the world? Yes, there are, right? And is one of them the Jews secretly control everyone and they're the puppet masters, etc.? Yes, we've shown you right wingers that even have the tattoo of Soros as the puppet master, and that's a thing that was used back in the 1930s in Germany, etc. So those things are real, and if you don't know them, you should know them so that you understand why people are so sensitive about it. But at the same time, AIPAC is going to spend $100 million. And right now, they're spending a couple of million dollars through a pro-science PAC to defeat Pramila Jayapal's sister, who's running for Congress. Intercept just reported on that. And so as they eliminate anyone who dares to oppose or criticize, simple criticism of a foreign government, you can't then say, you can't say facts about my lobbying efforts because of old anti-Semitic tropes. Well, brother, then we're stuck. What are we supposed to do? Okay, AIPAC is actually purchasing all these politicians. They're not alone. The drug companies and all the other corporations that give donations also purchase them. It's not specific to Jewish people at all, not within 1%. Now, but if you say, do not say those facts and pretend you don't know why these Republicans are supporting Israel unconditionally, why they're protecting them from war crime charges and attacking the United Nations, and talking about ending our cooperation with the whole world because the right-wing leaders of Israel have demanded it. Well, how do I do the news without telling you what's actually happening? Is it because of the AIPAC money? Definitely. If anyone is telling you, oh no, these Republican and Democratic politicians that all took money from AIPAC, and for a lot of the leadership, it's AIPAC is their top donor, then it doesn't influence them. Well, that's just a flat out lie. It definitely influences them. And it is what, otherwise they just did it because, oh, They have such an emotional connection to Israel. They're politicians, they don't have an emotional connection to anything.
Except for their own pockets.
Except for their own pockets.
Let's just keep it real.
So don't say crazy things about ethnic groups or religious groups, etc. Having said that, can you accurately state why politicians do what they do, which is lobbyist money? Definitely. So these people are basically raising their hands and saying, as long as you pay me through this lobbying group, I will serve Israel and not America.
How many times do we have to repeat this? How many times does that caveat need to be repeated so we can cover a story the way we would cover any other story or any other conflict involving any other country? I'm serious, because I'm getting kind of tired of it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, no one here on this show is saying that Jews control everything. No one on this show is anti-Semitic. If you're not an adult and you have difficulty comprehending or absorbing information, or criticism against a foreign country, and you want to just label anyone who has criticism against a foreign country as an anti-Semite, then don't watch this show. But like, we can't keep doing this caveat every time we cover Israel. Come on.
I hear you, but I want to explain the context for everybody, and I want to be careful because those tropes exist. Having said that, guys, Anna's right. Nobody ever says when Egypt gives money to Menendez and the gold bullion in his closet, etc. Now there's the stereotypes about Egyptians, which, by the way, there are some stereotypes.
Azerbaijan bought Henry Cuellar. He got indicted for it. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, they're moneyed interests representing every foreign country. It's just that when it comes to the Israel lobby, they're much more well-resourced, and yes, they're powerful. And so you literally have a lengthy list of Republican senators who were elected by American citizens, not by Israeli citizens, to represent American citizens, constituents in their state. And instead, they're spending their time writing a strongly worded letter threatening the International Criminal Court on behalf of a foreign country that has carried out war crimes in Gaza. That is what this story is. Yeah. If that offends you, okay, and you think that's anti-Semitic information to relay to you, then that's your problem.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, that is your problem.
But I don't just say that for the viewers out there. Yes, mainstream, if you don't understand the context, that's why I'm giving you the context. Mainstream media will never mention the AIPAC money in relationship to actual votes in Congress and to actual actions like this, when politicians stand up and go, no, we're for war criminals. America's definitely, definitely for war criminals who created the worst atrocities we've seen, some of the worst atrocities we've seen in our lifetime. You have to be totally confused as to why they would do that and why mainstream media would say you're not allowed to talk about their motivations. Okay, so look, let's get to the war crimes, because that's what they're covering up here. And it's unbelievably gross, including mass graves and torture.
So the UN conducted an investigation looking into some of the mass graves that were found in Gaza near hospitals that have been pretty much destroyed. And the details are just difficult to read about, but I'm gonna give you the information. So they discovered mass graves with corpses that showed clear signs of abuse and torture. The United Nations Special Procedures released a statement saying, we are horrified at details emerging from mass graves recently unearthed in the Gaza Strip. Over 390 bodies have been discovered at Nasser and Al-Shifa hospitals, including of women and children, with many reportedly showing signs of torture and summary executions and potential instances of people buried alive. Is it anti-Semitic to state what the UN investigation into these mass graves stated? Are there enough adults in the world who can absorb this accurate information about the atrocities that were committed against innocent people in Gaza? Or is that anti-Semitic, Cenk?
No, in all seriousness, I believe that the majority of mainstream media, which by the way has not reported this. As far as I know, cable news has not mentioned this once. But they're very concerned about the safety of some people in America. But when you talk about mass graves, etc., why don't they mention this? Because, well, they've been pretending all along that Israel is accidentally killing 24,000 women and children, accidentally doing a Where's Daddy program where they purposely murder their family members, accidentally using snipers to kill children and women. Okay.
Biden is a disgrace, okay? Biden is a full-blown disgrace of a president, of a human being. Okay, all of that nonsense about how he's such a moral and decent person, and he really knows how to connect with voters who have suffered from such severe loss. He's such a great guy. Do you think he mentioned this UN investigation?
Never, no.
He gave a speech today about about anti-Semitism and how we must fight it, which, okay, that's fine, but how about a mention, at least a mention for the Palestinians who were literally buried alive based on this investigation by the UN?
Yeah, and so it was, okay, it was Holocaust Remembrance Day, and that's why Biden only mentioned Israel and the Jewish part. And I get it, and if he mentioned it on the Holocaust Remembrance Day, a whole heap of people would have ripped his head off, okay? And so who are those heap of people? Yeah, some are media, some are donors, etc. But brother, you can't say on Holocaust Remembrance Day, never again.
As it's happening now.
And then do an asterisk and go, yeah, but it's okay if it's Palestinians or Muslims. It's not okay. And look, so they use the charges of anti-Semitism 24/7 as a political tool, and it's really gross, right? So, but in reality, if you say 1,200 people killed, 860 civilians on October 7th is terrible, which I hope to God you do say, and then you say 34,500 dead in Gaza, 8,000 buried in the rubble, that's over 42,000 dead, confirmed 24,000 women and children dead, is not a big deal. Their lives are not as important as the 1,200 that were lost.
They don't even get a mention.
Yeah.
They don't even get a mention.
They don't even get a mention.
They don't get
then,
a mention.
Then don't say never again. Just don't say it. Just say, hey, if you're American or you're Israeli or Jewish or certain religions, Christian, whatever, then never again. But Muslims will kill all day long and no one cares. Biden doesn't care, the media doesn't care. And honestly, the reason I brought up anti-Semitism in this context is because if they're gonna do false charges of anti-Semitism 24/7 for political purposes to defend this foreign government, well, okay, then if you say that the 24,000 women and children dead are not as important as the 860 dead on the Israeli side, you're being overtly racist. You're saying Muslim lives don't matter. Who gives a damn about Muslim women and children? Israel should go into Rafah and massacre more innocent women and children?
Here's some more details.
That's an avowedly racist position.
Yeah, they don't care. Here's some more details from the UN investigation. The treatment of pregnant and lactating women continues to be appalling, with the direct bombardment of hospitals and deliberate denial of access to healthcare facilities by Israeli snipers. They refer to it as deliberate. Combined with the lack of beds and medical resources, placing an estimated 50,000 pregnant Palestinian women and 20,000 newborn babies at unimaginable risk. Over 183 women per day are giving birth without pain relief, while hundreds of babies have died because of a lack of electricity to power incubators. The dreadful conditions have resulted in increases in miscarriages by up to 300%. Understandably, you know, the international community sees reports like this. They see the footage of what Gaza looks like, what the bombardments look like, what the pain and suffering looks like. And the International Criminal Court is understandably considering, you know, arrest warrants for people like Benjamin Netanyahu. And in response to that, in response to all of that slaughter, you have Republican members of our Senate writing to the ICC to say, target Israel, and we will target you. Okay, the senators tell ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan, adding that they will sanction your employees and associates and bar you and your families from the United States.
By the way, they never threatened this when the same tribunals were looking into war crimes that America committed potentially in Iraq and Afghanistan. So guys, don't tell me that the AIPAC money isn't relevant when all of a sudden they say the one country you cannot ever sanction is not America, but Israel. And if you dare do it to Israel, we'll go after your family members and sanction them. If you're one of the good guys, human rights experts that are trying to prevent ethnic cleansing and a genocide. If you live outside America, you've got to be wondering, who the hell are we debating? These things are so obvious and the whole world knows them. Why are you guys getting all worked up about things that are so clear? The top human rights experts in the world have all agreed to this. Because here in America, It's wall-to-wall gaslighting. Establishment media and establishment politicians all pretending that Israel is so moral and just and holy, and they had to do all of this, and the goddamn violent, savage Palestinians made them kill the Palestinians.
Right.
I mean, this, and so if you live outside the country, you realize that's lunacy. If you live inside America, this is the propaganda we have to deal with 24/7. And our job here is to deliver the truth to you guys and not the nonsense propaganda the mainstream media is trying to brainwash you with.
All right, we'll be back.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna, and Paratrooper Chad, Anomalous 3, and Kumar Dasari. They all just hit the join button below the video. We appreciate you guys. You allow us to do this show. And speaking of which, Christopher, John Mar, and Tony Guzman gifted memberships. Paul Smith and John Mariana gifted 5. You guys are the best. Anna.
We've got some updates on the hush money trial. Let's get to it.
Eventually, the two had sex, she said, but as she began to describe that encounter, the sexual encounter, that's when the defense objected and the judge sustained the objection.
The judge has warned the prosecution, particularly when talking about the sexual encounter, that we don't need all the details here.
The judge really doesn't want to go over a line that where the details become so prejudicial that it's unfair to the defendant.
A big day in the hush money trial against Donald Trump, where the woman really at the center of the big controversy involving the hush money payments, Stormy Daniels, testified in court. Now, in her testimony to the prosecution, Daniels explained her history with Donald Trump, how they met, including her sexual encounter with him back in 2006. Now, that part of her testimony drew multiple objections from the judge overseeing the case. Of course, that's Judge Juan Merchan. And the New York Times described what she said as follows. Daniels' testimony was incredibly uncomfortable at various points, sometimes lurid in detail, and she repeatedly went further than the judge wanted her to, prompting him to curtly tell her at least twice to stick to the question. Daniels also mocked Trump several times in ways that felt discordant to the story she was telling. There were other issues as well. For instance, she was like cracking jokes at the witness stand, which according to reports, the jury did not react to. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. It seems like the jury is taking their job very seriously and they're not looking to show their hand. But at the same time, you gotta consider the charges that Trump is facing here. So he is accused of falsifying documents in order to cover up a crime. And the crime in this case is campaign finance violations that were committed as a result of his fixer or former fixer, Michael Cohen, paying hush money to Stormy Daniels in 2016. And so I don't know, look, the only reason why I think they had her on the witness stand, Cenk, to ask her questions about their sexual relationship is because Trump has denied that they ever had sex. And so the prosecution kind of justified questioning Stormy Daniels at the stand, having her testify to really home in on the relationship that she had with Trump. But I'm uncertain as to whether or not any of her testimony is actually helpful in proving that Trump intended to commit this crime, intended to pay the hush money payment through Michael Cohen and then falsify documents in order to cover up the crime. That's the kind of testimony that's super relevant to this case if you're looking to find Trump guilty.
Yeah, there's a couple of different things that went wrong today in my opinion. And I'm with the judge who seemed angry and irritated at the prosecution and Stormy Daniels today because look, I think prejudicing a jury is overrated overall, and I've said that throughout every case we've ever covered. But if you care about that issue, there's nothing more prejudicial than getting into different kinds of sex acts that somebody had with an adult actress while they were married to their wife, etc. And it's not pertinent to this case. The only thing that's pertinent is, did they sleep together? did he then pay her hush money and falsify business records to make that happen? How they had the sex is entirely irrelevant. All the seedy details of it, I mean, look, all over cable news, they're giggling about it. And they're like, it feels to me like they're so happy to hear all of these.
It's so dumb.
Details.
And honestly, when it comes to showing your hand, I think the media certainly is today by like salivating over like the salacious details of her testimony without really considering how today was not helpful for any case looking to find Trump guilty of committing a crime here.
Yeah, so it's not helpful in a couple of different ways. And number one, if you're on the jury and you're hearing a person who now you're beginning to wonder, wait, what's going on here? So why is she telling us like all these salacious details when it's not necessarily pertinent? And then she said that she didn't necessarily consent. She didn't say no, but she blacked out and doesn't remember consenting, etc., which she's never said before.
Yeah.
And okay, look, if that's true, that's kind of huge, but totally different case. But you can't just, I don't know, man, saying that in front of the jury when that's not what this case is about, not helpful. And then the defense gets to say she's never said that before. And all of a sudden she comes on the trial and says this. That seems weird. The judge had to tell them don't talk about genitalia, like his genitalia.
Yeah, no, it was
come on. Absurd.
It really, I mean, again, this testimony is not necessary or important in proving that Trump has committed the crime that he has been charged with here or indicted for. Prosecutor Susan Hoffinger told or says that Stormy Daniels's testimony was necessary to show that Donald Trump's motive for the hush money scheme and cover up was that, look, the story is so salacious that this is precisely what the defendant did not want to become public. I mean, you could just, I think everyone knows why Trump didn't want the story to become public, right? Like he cheated on his wife, who I believe was pregnant at the time, with Stormy Daniels.
No, she wasn't pregnant at the time of Stormy Daniels.
Was it Karen McDougal?
I think that, I forget if it was McDougal or Daniels, but right after Melania delivered, he went to go see them.
Oh, I see.
And then when Melania was pregnant, he tried to hook up with a reporter that had come, and she was upstairs. She interviewed them together, and then when Melania went upstairs, Trump cornered her, according to her, and then tried to grab her. Right.
Okay, that's not, honestly, so that's enough of a reason for Trump not to want the salacious details to come out, right? Like we don't need to hear about his genitalia on the witness stand, but we do need to hear testimony that proves that Trump knew about the hush money payments, that he facilitated the reimbursement to Michael Cohen, that he forged documents or engaged in falsifying documents. And so what's interesting is the testimony prior to Stormy Daniels today was helpful in building that case, because the testimony consisted of individuals who work closely with Trump saying that he's a micromanager as it pertains to business matters and that he's involved in, you know, every minor detail, which to be quite honest with you is tough for me to believe considering how he operated as president. But that testimony again is much more powerful in proving the case that the prosecutors are alleged to want to prove here.
Yeah, and so look, did he falsify the business records? That's what this trial is about. As I've said many times, definitely. There's almost no question that he falsified them. I think that the only way that he gets off is if the jury feels sympathy for him and goes, yeah, he falsified the business records, but it was embarrassing. And I don't know that he did it for political reasons. Maybe he did it because he didn't want his wife to know what kind of a terrible, disgusting human being he is.
I couldn't help but think about what happened to Bill Clinton when he was impeached, right? Like I thought about how that impeachment process made Bill Clinton this sympathetic figure in the eyes of a lot of Americans, including those who disagreed with him politically. There's someone sitting on this set right now who identified as a Republican at the time, right?
Like, yeah.
And you actually started to feel sympathy for Bill Clinton based on what they were putting him through. So you have to consider that when it comes to what the jury heard today from Stormy Daniels, who, by the way, when the defense had an opportunity to cross-examine her, they asked whether she hates Trump. And she said, yeah, I hate Trump. which makes it appear that this is, you know, motivated by a personal vendetta or a personal, you know, targeting of Trump.
So why is she doing it? There's a couple of different possibilities. One is what Anna just explained. Two is for political reasons, they want as much damaging information about Trump out in the public as they possibly can. And number three, Stormy Daniels might feel embarrassed that she was with Donald Trump. So she wants to say, hey, not really, right? And so, and by the way, reason number four might be that it's true that she did go through all of that and she didn't know, et cetera, et cetera. But this is not the context in which to discuss that. Anna, you're so right about that, because back then I'm a Republican. They do this BS impeachment of Clinton, and I remember saying, look, wasn't on any jury. That's very different, right? But I was like, look, I get it, man. He slept with Monica Lewinsky. I get that he lied about it, and that's technically perjury. But they invested a guy for a real estate thing, and then they smeared him on a sex thing. And this is just garbage. This is total garbage. And yeah, it made me have sympathy for Bill Clinton. I don't want that to happen for Donald Trump accidentally, because people have their own personal agendas or political agendas. Just do the trial on the facts. He definitely falsified the business records. Stick to that. And then one last thing about the media. I read in several headlines that Trump pushed his lawyer today. And I was like, even for Trump, I'm like, that has a very low chance of being true. I read into the details. He nudged her at different points. That's his lawyer. Jesus. Come on, guys. Come on, man.
So just to talk a little more about the lawyer and how she handled the cross-examination with Stormy Daniels. So Trump lawyer Susan Nikellis asked Daniels if she hates Trump, and Daniels said yes. I wanted to give you the details on that, because I think that that testimony might actually hurt the case against Trump. Asked if she wants Trump to go to jail, Daniels said that she wants him to be held accountable, and if he is found guilty, absolutely. At that point, Trump's lawyer also suggests that Daniels aims to make money in some of her pursuits, and Daniels fires back, don't we all want to make money for ourselves? Now, Stormy Daniels was also asked about a tweet about Donald Trump back in 2022, where she said, I'll never give that orange turd a dime. Daniels said that the tweet is in retaliation for what he said to me. Yes, Trump's lawyer confirmed, you call him names all the time. And Daniels says, yes. So you see what the strategy here is by the defense, to basically discredit Stormy Daniels and her testimony by making it apparent that she is targeting Trump based on a personal grudge or beef that she has with Trump. I don't know how well that's gonna play with the jury, but if you're seeing, you know, this celebratory nature in the coverage in, you know, the corporate media or legacy media, just be careful, because I don't personally think that her testimony was all that helpful for the prosecution today.
Yeah, the Hope Hicks testimony was very mixed too, and they made it seem like, oh my God, that's it, Trump is toast after Hope Hicks. No, not necessarily. She said some things that were damaging to Trump and some things that were exculpatory. So last thing though, guys, Trump never helps his own case, because he's so absurd and out of control. To this day, he's denying that they had sex.
I know, and I
like think no one believes that. Not even the most MAGA dude on earth. That guy will tell you, oh, of course they had sex, and that's because Trump's an alpha male and he's allowed to have sex with whoever he wants, et cetera, et cetera. But zero people in America believe that Donald Trump did not have sex with Stormy Daniels.
Exactly. So he should have just taken ownership of that, because at that point, the testimony about their like sexual details would not have, I don't think that would have happened.
Yeah, right? If he just said, yeah, we did have sex, then there's actually no point in bringing Stormy Daniels on to testify at all.
Unless she has some insight into how the hush money payment was carried out or how the reimbursement to Michael Cohen was carried out, but that's not what the testimony was about, clearly.
Yeah, or at least a great majority of
it. Right, exactly. All right, you know what, let's just take our break, but when we come back, I want to get to the classified documents case, because there's some bad news on that end as well.
For Donald Trump.
Really? I don't think so. I think there's bad news for the prosecutor. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, then we might disagree on that story.
All right.
Interesting. Come right back.